Hello and welcome to episode 31 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, we have a roundup from some impressive performances in Oslo and Stockholm. We look ahead to the European Under-23 Championships in Estonia, as well as a stacked Monaco Diamond League. There is some controversy in regards to the GB Olympic team selection, and we also have an in-depth interview with Tokyo-bound and 3,000-metre European indoor champion Amy Eloise Markholtz. As always, I'm joined by Kat Hutchison and George Beardmore. How are we doing, guys?
Yeah, doing well, thank you. How are you?
Very good. So I should say we're talking just before England kick off their semi-final, so we'll be all rushing off to watch that afterwards. Kat, how are you? You okay?
Yeah, good. Yeah, a little bit injured at the moment, which is frustrating. Really motivated for marathon training in the mind, but not so much the body at the moment, which is annoying, but it's improving. So, yeah.
So we got 12 or so weeks, do we, to Manchester?
Yeah, I think still maybe 13 or I think even if I only do a 12-week build-up, my plan is to really underdo the training this time. So instead of getting up to 80 or 90 miles a week, just 70 maximum. And I ran my best at 25 miles a week, so I'm going to try and really underdo it and see what happens. So if I don't start till late, it's fine this time.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah. Speaking of pressure, George, are we going to do Denmark first things first tonight?
I was confident until now, really, when you start to get a bit nervous. Now, if we play them like we did against Ukraine, I think we'll be fine. Need Kane playing well still, and then yeah, should be fine, but just never know, as long as it's not penalties.
Well, listeners will know one way or the other, so hopefully it all goes to plan. George spoke about your latest 10,000 meters on the track a week or so ago at Leeds. You've got another one this Friday, the Fast Friday event, which we'll have a little bit of a chat about in general. But how are you feeling in the lead up to another crack at a quick 10,000 on the track?
Yeah, feeling pretty good, thank you. Bit of a tight turnaround. It's been 2 weeks and a day, so 15 days in between, which probably, as I say, is a bit tight, but it took me a while to recover from Leeds. It was a Thursday night race. I probably wasn't feeling normally again until kind of the Monday, Tuesday of the next week. But I've got 3 solid sessions in the last week and a half, so I doubt I've lost any fitness. I feel, yeah, pretty much recovered and ready to go again, and nothing to lose really this time because I've already kind of banked a good time. So just kind of go all in, I suppose, for sub 30. And if it means I blow up spectacularly, then that doesn't really matter in my mind, because like, I know I've not got worse in 2 weeks, just kind of pressure's off. I've run a fast time already, 30:15 2 weeks ago. So yeah, just looking forward to, yeah, giving it kind of even more of a go, sub 30, than I did last time. I think last time I probably played it a little bit safe, just because I wanted, in the back of my head, I wanted to make sure I still ran a good time. So that, it probably didn't cost me 15 seconds, maybe 5 seconds in the middle, but you just never know. So hopefully kind of another go at it, and yeah, just see what happens.
And hopefully a bit... Go on, Kat, sorry.
That should be fun to watch. It's always more interesting than watching you go out and do exactly what you said you're going to do. Watch you go out hard and see if you can hang on is going to be even better. And yeah, I ask this every time, but is there a live stream for this?
I got a feeling there will be. I haven't, unless I've missed something on kind of event email, I haven't seen anything in particular yet. But last, I did it 2 years ago and there was. So I would assume so, but I haven't. We'll put it up on our Instagram if we do have one, but I think there will be.
Yeah, well, let's have a quick look ahead to it, because it's a fairly big event on the UK scene. One, because there's not a huge number of, as we know, 10,000 meters on the track. And this event is almost in the same sort of mold as the Highgate Night of PBs, in that there's hopefully going to be a really good atmosphere. There's spectators allowed and encouraged. It's being held at Walthamstow in London. There's going to be I think, let's have a look now, George. There's going to be three, what they're calling super fast graded 10,000s, starting from 6:20 p.m. And then there's going to be a men's and a women's super elite 10,000, which includes the England Athletics 10,000 meter champs. So the women are going off at 8:25 p.m. and the men at 9:10 p.m. There's going to be a trackside bar, and all profits from that trackside bar go to the winner's prize pot, which is really cool. It's going to be a £400 club team prize. There's going to be bonus prizes for PB runners and a whole host of other things going on. I think there's going to be food stalls, music, and all the rest of it. George, your race, are you in the 9:10 super elite?
Yes, yeah, I am.
Perfect. And who else do you know in terms of start lists? Quick guys are going to be in that same race.
So I think, just going through the start list quickly earlier, I think Omar Ahmed is the fastest on paper. I think his PB is 29:26 on the track, but he's run 28:39 on the road. So potentially, if he's in good shape, there's a lot more in his track PB. So much like, I think Leeds was sub 29 as well. So I imagine there will be sub 29 here. Jack Gray's run 28:49. I think they're the only two sub 29s, unless I've missed anyone, but quite a lot in that 29 to 29:30 sort of range. So Josh Grace, Lucien Allison, Callum Johnson, who's won National Cross, Jonathan Escalante Phillips, Rob Warner, Josh Lunn, a couple of guys. So Dom Nolan's never ran a 10,000, but he's run 13:53. So I'm sure he'll be right up there as well. Alex Brown as well. I think this is his track 10K debut, but he's run 14:11 on the road. So yeah, plenty of big names in that men's elite race. So definitely going to be a quick one.
And in terms of numbers in that field, do you think you're going to have people around you at your sort of time as well?
Yeah, I'd have thought so. I think there's quite a few in the, there's maybe 25 or 30 in the race, so there's quite a few in the high 29s, low 30s sort of area. And I believe there may be a pacemaker at 15 minutes in both the A and B race for the men, so that's pretty good. So yeah, I'm sure I have plenty of company.
And weather forecast at the moment, have you looked? Are you refreshing the BBC weather app?
Yeah, I've looked a couple of times. I think it was something like 9 mile an hour wind, 20 degrees at 9 o'clock. So yeah, pretty, I mean, bit of a breeze, but when you're in a big pack, then that's not a problem. So yeah, good conditions, I think.
And you'll travel down on the day, will you, on the Friday?
Yeah, I think it'll probably take 3 hours, so I'll make sure I've got time to stop and yeah, give myself plenty of time. Not always easy driving into London, but be fine, I thought.
Sounds good. We should say in the women's elite race, a couple of previous guests we've had on our show. So Jenny Nesbitt and Clara Evans, who we've interviewed, will be racing in the women's elite race. Charlotte Arter, who I believe George has the quickest PB of all the women at 32:15. Hannah Irwin and Mari McLennan also in that women's A race. So should be a fairly good one in the women's race as well.
Yeah, maybe. So Jenny, is it 32:30, the Welsh Commonwealth Standard? So I know Jenny will be chasing that, Clara Evans probably as well. And it depends whether Charlotte Arter's time was in the window. I don't know if it was. So I imagine Commonwealth Standards, and Mary McLennan, she's Scottish, maybe going for a Scottish standard as well. So yeah, lots to look out for in the women's race too.
Last time it was held in 2019, we believe, winners in the men's race, Adam Hickey, who ran 29:08, Jack Gray, 29:12, and five men broke 30 in that race, George.
Yeah.
In the women's race, Nicole Taylor won in 33:31 and Tracy Barlow second in 34:15. So hopefully we'll see similar times this time around.
Yeah, I think if anything, it looks like it's going to be even quicker this time around, which is good. They've since we've got, maybe with the lack of a high gates for kind of normal club runners. Yeah, hopefully it looks like even better standard.
Yeah, well, as you say, we will stick up the live stream details as soon as we see them and again just before on the Friday. Yeah, so good luck with that one, George. And we'll look forward to hearing all about it next time we record.
Thank you. You had a couple of races yourself this week?
I did. I raced twice in 1 week, for I think pretty sure that's the first time I've done that. And I've sort of thought they were solid rather than spectacular. The 5K on the Wednesday at Bristol, which was a nice event, odd down cycle track. So it's just three loops of a cycle track, which was cool. I ran a 15:34, I believe. And then the 10,000 at Fradley, 10K, which is near Lichfield. Again, a few, I think, again, 5 seconds off PB, 32:36 I ran. Interestingly, George, your coach and previous guest won that Fradley 10K, Frank Baddick.
Yeah.
Had a very brief conversation with him afterwards. And I think it was his first race back since the Kew Gardens Marathon Trials. And I think he was fairly happy with his effort, although he did say to me that he was running quicker 10K splits during his marathon than he did on that day. So, yeah, interesting. He was out in front solo the whole way. So,
yeah.
Cool. All right, then. Well, let's move on, guys. Let's have a chat about some of the main news that we've seen over the last week or so. And, George, I'll come to you again because this is something that you mentioned a couple of weeks ago in terms before we knew the news. Mark Pierce, we were sort of debating whether he would be going to the Olympics based upon his world rankings. It's transpired that he was given an invite from World Athletics to attend the Olympics, but British Athletics have decided not to take him, whereas they have taken other athletes, including Reve Walcott-Nolan, who are in a similar situation. So talk us through what you understand about it.
Yeah, so basically, I imagine World Athletics see who is kind of selected officially by every country, and then see if they've got any space for invites based on the world rankings to just fill out the fields to a maximum number, I assume. And I think there was a race walker who I forget his name, someone King, who got an invite. Mark Pierce got an invite. Dom King, I think it was. Nathaniel Mitchell-Blake, David King, the hurdler, Revy Walcott-Nolan all got invites. And I don't understand how they can sit there in a boardroom and kind of just make the decision to accept some invites and not others. I don't know how they decide whether it's kind of their top eight medal potential, top eight potential sort of things. But just to me, it just seems like a supportive governing body who's kind of trying to do the best for our athletes will just accept an Olympic invite, because like, why would you want to deny someone their Olympic dream if they've, well, essentially been given us a selection standard by World Athletics? I just don't understand how you can kind of reject that. And I mean, I'm sure it's whether it's the cost of sending them, I don't know who pays that. I imagine it's British Athletics, whether it's that.
That's the bit I don't understand, whether it's like whether they're limited on the size of the squad and whether it's the Olympics that say that's how big a squad you can bring to Tokyo and they have to decide across the whole thing on their squad size, or if it is finances. But if it was finances, surely they could say, okay, fine, crowdfund your own place and you can come.
Yeah.
It can't just be financial, because, you know, I'm sure everyone would chip in to send Mark Pierce to the Olympics. Like, it can't just be financial. It must be something to do with whether they're allowed to take them or not, because otherwise that's really sad if it's just money.
Yeah, I mean, I can only think, because I remember, I've just got the article up here, it happened to Jade Lally, who is a thrower, I think discus, in 2019 at Doha. And she basically got told, this is on her Instagram, that they denied her opportunity because in there, this is what her message says, what it takes to win statistics, she was very unlikely to medal at Doha, and that's why they rejected her invite. Which, that's just not the point. Like, there are lots of athletes in that squad that are very unlikely to medal. Like, just to not to deny someone's opportunity when they've essentially got a selection standard or been given the opportunity, it just, to me, it comes across as a business decision rather than a decision of a governing body that's trying to get the best for their athletes. I just don't understand it.
No, but it was same with Mark Pearce, who's PB'd like every race recently, so he's on an upward trajectory, like Revy Wolcott Nolan, which, I mean, that is a great decision. Yeah. That one is, you know, is exactly, she's improving. And I said last time, it's just a shame the Olympics came too early, that she didn't quite get to the standard, but they've gone and invited her now. And that's a great decision. But he's also on that kind of upward trajectory and, you know, improving. And he ran such a brave race at the British Champs and was only 2 seconds outside the standard.
Yeah.
He won it. He could be the best in Britain. So why does he not get to go? I wish they would be more open about why they can't take everyone.
I think the fact they're not open suggests they don't want to tell people the reason to me. I mean, I might be reading into that too much. And I'm sure Mark Pearce has been given a proper reason. And from what I'd seen on Twitter, and I think it was Luke Gunn who may coach him, said that kind of he's just not the type of guy to, I mean, it might not have been him that said it, but someone said that Mark Pearce just isn't the type of guy to cause a fuss. He's just very kind of polite and but I think obviously there may have been tactical races, so this isn't necessarily entirely true, but I think Pearce's PB would have finished 7th and 8th at the last two Olympics, so it's not like he's kind of just going to be miles on the back if he's there. He's a British champ. They would have had to take him if he was 2 seconds quicker. They would have had no choice, and surely they would have found the money. And if it is a money thing, just say, set up a GoFundMe page, raise this much money and you can go. And I'm sure the athletics community would do that.
I think it has to be a number restriction thing. But I wish they'd say, and then we wouldn't be frustrated. We'd just say, okay, you've had to choose, and it's probably a difficult decision. But
Just for our listeners, I'm not sure if we've said Mark Pearce is a steeplechaser, and the information you've just said, George, his PB would have got him in 7th or 8th position in the last two Olympics, and BA, British Athletics, usually use a medal or top 8 potential as their reason. And we're not, and just to compare that with some of the athletes who have been chosen to go from a similar situation. So for example, Wolcott Nolan was 56th fastest, Nathaniel Mitchell-Blake 214th fastest, etc., etc. And we're not saying they shouldn't be going, but it doesn't seem like the same reasoning has been used across the board here, which, as you say, Kat, is the frustration on top of not having a detailed explanation as to why. We'll see. Okay, but as we said, Revy Wolcott Nolan, someone we've spoken about before, will be going. She has had her entry accepted, which is great. And George and Kat, now a fairly strong women's 1500 meter team, in Laura Muir, Katie Snowden, Revy Wolcott Nolan. A pretty strong team.
Yeah, just great to send a full team. I think particularly in those middle distances where we've said we're kind of really strong across the board, men and women, it was a bit kind of weird that we didn't manage to even send 12 athletes, 8 and 15 across the board. Really good that we've now got a full middle distance squad, and hopefully Wolcott, as a 800 meter background, so potentially she should do pretty well in a championship 1500. She proved that in at British Champs when she kind of did all the work as well. So I think we've got a really strong team, which is good.
In terms of who they may be facing, possibly one of the big stories over the last week or so is that Safwan Hassan has been named for the 1500 meters, the 5000 meters and the 10,000 meters at Tokyo. So is triple gold possible? We've got a tweet here from Ben Bloom, who has listed all the dates that if she did do the triple, she would have to run, including the heats and the finals. So it's July 30th, 5,000 heats, August the 2nd, 1,500 meter heats, August the 2nd, 5,000 meter final, August the 4th, 1,500 semis, August the 6th, 1,500 final, August the 7th, 10,000 meter final. So, I mean, that seems fairly undoable to me, but if she did all three, what do you guys think?
I think it's more doable than I ever thought a triple would be, particularly so she never runs twice in the same session. She has to run twice on August the 2nd, but 1500 meter heats in the morning and 5000 meter final in the evening, which obviously isn't ideal. I don't know. I mean, I doubt she'll necessarily do it. I think that she's probably just keeping her options open as late as she can, maybe see what her rivals run at Monaco and the Diamond Leagues before deciding which is her best two chances. But if she does do it, then yeah, that will be pretty well. Has that ever happened? I suppose someone might have done 200, 400, 4x4. Doubt anyone's ever done 100, 200, 400. Yeah. Yeah, it would be pretty insane if someone does that. So we'll have to wait and see. But
I think it would be good for the British runners if she does that, because the 1500 meter ones can try and burn her up in the heats and try and trash her legs a bit for the 5000 final. I think it just gives somebody a chance, because she can't be on it on every single event. So it kind of gives everybody a bit more of a chance against her if she's going to try that. It may turn out to be a bad strategy. She may ruin her Olympics and not really perform well in all of them, although it's a Fan Hassan and she'll probably just get a gold in all of them. But yeah, hopefully it doesn't work in her favour.
Interesting to see. Speaking of other big medal hopefuls at the Olympics, we mentioned a while ago that Timothy Cheruiyot, who is basically one of, if not the best 1500 metre runner in the world at the moment, didn't finish in the top three in the Kenyan trials. He finished fourth. However, it seems as though he will, or is set to be selected for the Olympics as one of the athletes who came second, I believe, 19-year-old Kamar Etiang, who finished second in the Kenyan Olympic trials, is not able to compete in Tokyo. And presumably he would be replaced by fourth place Timothy. Yeah. What do you think about this one, George?
Yeah, I mean, obviously if you're from a Josh Kerr, Jake Whiteman point of view, it's better without Cheruiyot, but I mean, he should be at the Olympics. I don't know what happened to those trials that he finished fourth, but he hasn't lost a race in 2 years that I've seen. He looked good at the Diamond League earlier this week. And I think, so the reason this 19-year-old can't compete is you have to be in like a drug testing pool for a certain amount of time before you're allowed to compete on the international stage, which I didn't really know that existed as a rule, and it is a good rule, I suppose, just to kind of make sure that everyone's like been drug tested for a while. So it's not been confirmed yet that I've seen, but I think unless the Athletics Kenya can try and find a way to get him in, like around the rules, or I'm not sure. Then it says here on a tweet that Athletics Kenya is in talks with the Athletics Integrity Unit to find a solution. I mean, if I was them, to be honest, I wouldn't be finding a solution. I think Timothy Cheruiyot is the solution. But
Athletics Kenya don't have they do have some leeway, because they're not the three past the post, if you like. They do have a discretionary place if they want to use one, I believe, not like America. Interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I think it's that he should be in the Olympics, quite simply. He deserves it. Something clearly happened in those trials. I think he had a hamstring problem or something, but the fact they didn't even give him a discretionary place is just bizarre. So I think it's best to have the best athletes there.
Absolutely. Well, before we have a look at the Euro Under 23 championships, guys, let's have a quick look at some of the upcoming. We've got a fairly stacked Diamond League in Monaco on Friday, the 9th of July, and there should be plenty of sort of pre-Olympic head-to-heads and a bit of a pre-show to Tokyo. Loads of really good fields across the events. If you try and pick out some of the main ones, the 800-metre women's event sees Laura Muir and Gemma Riki up against a world-class field. 1500-metre men, there aren't any GB athletes. However, there is, as we've just been talking about, Timothy Cheruiyot, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, Stuart McSwain, Mohamed Khatir going in that one. So that would be a fairly good race to watch. Hopefully Mark Pearce will run well. He's in the men's steeplechase. It'd be great to see him come out and just do a really amazing performance. He'll be up against Olympic champion Kipruto. And in the men's 800 metres, we will see again Ollie Dustin, Elliot Giles in action in what is a crazy field as well. What is the race you're most looking forward to seeing in the Monaco Diamond League there, George?
Yeah, the men's 800, I think. I mean, it's more than a national, an Olympic final, as far as I can see. You've got Bryce Hopple, Clayton Murphy, Manuel Carrere, Ferguson Rotich, Nigel Amos, Patrick Dobek, and then Dustin and Giles. Yeah, that's more or less as good as it gets.
You're going to really have to watch it on the start line of your race.
Yes.
And you're going to have to promise us a really impressive crash and burn race or massive victory if we're going to watch your race over the Diamond League.
I'm a bit annoyed I'm missing
it. It'll be spectacular.
Yes, I am annoyed I'm missing it, but
you can watch it. They'll be done in 2 minutes. You'll have 2 minutes left on the start line to get rid of your phone.
Just going back to Monaco then, anything you're looking forward to there, Kat? Anything that sticks out to you? We've got the steeplechase in the women as well. So Lizzie Bird, who we interviewed last time, will be racing Emma Coburn, Genevieve Gregson, and other big names there.
Yeah, we're just looking at that. That should be a pretty impressive women's steeplechase.
So basically tune in after you've watched George or before you watch George. Fast Friday, tune in on Friday to the Monaco Diamond League. I presume it will be on BBC.
Now I think about it, I think it's on BBC 7 till 9, which must mean these times are an hour out from UK time. So yeah, I think it's BBC 7 till 9. I hope
you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Great. That case, let's have a preview for the European Under 23 champs. So quite a few familiar names in the lineup for GB. So these champs were originally scheduled to be held in Bergen in Norway. They've been moved to Estonia, Tallinn, 8th to the 11th of July. George, do you want to pick out some of the main names to look out for in the Euro Under 23s?
Yeah, so men's 800 is, one we've had massive success in European juniors in the past, I think. So McClear, Patterson and Dustin did a 1-2-3 Euro Under 20s a few years ago. So McClear and Patterson are back. And I think Tom Randolph is a third in that team. And McClear and Patterson are a third and fourth fastest in the field on PB. So have a really good chance. I think Javier Miron of Spain is probably the favourite. He's got 1:44.82 PB. And then there's a Belgian that's run quicker than McClear, who's run 1:45.8, and then Patterson 1:45.9. So that's a really strong field. Same in the men's 1500. So Tiernan Crawken, Josh Lay, George Mills, who were the top three, I think, at England Under 23s a couple of weeks ago. So Lay and Mills are kind of amongst the four athletes in the field that have run sub 3:37. So lots of medal chances in those men's 8 and 15s. Weirdly, no Charles Hicks in the 5K or the 10K, and I think he was like a European leader, unless he's still under 20. I don't know, but Isaac Akers, Tom Mortimer, and Rory Leonard are in the 5K team. Tom is one of only three men in the field who've run under 13:30 this year, so got a medal chance for him there. Just one in the men's 10K, David Melville. He's the fifth fastest in the field. No GB athletes in the steeple, which is a shame in the men's. Then over on the women's side, Izzy Boffey's one of our strongest athletes. She's kind of amongst the leading contenders, second fastest in the field. Erin Wallace is running really well at the moment. Got a silver at a British champs, and she's where is she in the field? Only two athletes are faster than her, I think, two or three. So got a really good chance there. And then women's 5K, Eleanor Bolton and Izzy Fry, who are both sub 16 athletes, so should be kind of inside the top 10, if not better. Eleanor Bolton's in the 10K as well, so they're trying to do the double there, and the fourth fastest in the field, actually, in the 10K. And then the last event on the distance side is women's steeple. There are seven sub 10 athletes. Elise Thorner is one of them. and Sarah Tate's run 10.49, so eighth fastest in the field, I presume. So yeah, lots of medal chances across the board, really. In your European under 23s.
Perfect. And before Kat asks, it's going to be streamed on the European Athletics website. So as you said, 8th to the 11th of July. So some good athletics to watch. We should also give a special mention, Kat, to a Worcester AC athlete who's going to be competing in the high jump, Joel Clark-Kahn. We've mentioned him a few times. Performed well at the British Champs as well. So one to look out for from close to home. Okay. So we've had a look at the Monaco Diamond League as well. We know that next week we will also have a Gateshead Diamond League, and there's some pretty good entry lists there in the men's mile, the men's 800, the women's mile and the men's 3000. Some of the British interest there will be Piers Copeland in the men's mile, Elliot Giles, Jake Hayward, George Mills, Matthew Stonier, Jake Whiteman. In the men's 800 as well, we should see another good race. Jamie Webb, from a GB perspective, will be up against Daniel Rowden, Clayton Murphy, Peter Bowl, and a whole host of other names there. Women's mile, Holly Archer, who we've spoken about quite a few times, Katie Snowden, from a GB perspective, alongside Evan Wallace and Reve Walcott-Nolan. And in the men's 3000, we're going to see Sam Atkin, who's been selected for the Olympic team. He'll be racing Andy Butcher, Johnny Davis, Patrick Deva, against another really strong field, Jack Rowe as well. Also, Phil Norman, steeplechaser, will be in a flat 3,000 metre in there as well, which is interesting. Other big names in that one, George, who jumps out at you?
Yeah, I mean, that men's 800 again is, I can only imagine that these Americans and Kenyans are kind of just over in Europe for Monaco, and then obviously for America that means they're sort of halfway to Tokyo, I suppose, or depends where you fly. But yeah, I mean, that men's 800 with, I mean, I thought Clayton Murphy was favourite really for the Olympics after he ran a world lead of the US trials and looked really, really good, but then obviously Elliot Giles beat him last night, so who knows. But yeah, that's a really good race. And then, as you say, that men's 3k as well with McSwain and Morgan McDonald. I'm excited to see Paddy Deaver again. Yeah, Phil Norman in a flat 3K should be interesting. Yeah, lots to look forward to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The miles, the women's mile is looking really good. And I think, did you miss out Jess Judd out of that list of British women?
I did.
And the family. We never get her to come and do an interview if we don't even mention her.
Or Safan Hassan, I have to mention her as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to make it pretty interesting. When you look at her 1500 metre time against all the others, I wonder who will win.
It is a bit like, yeah. Okay, well, loads of athletics to watch. Yeah, loads of athletics to watch coming up, which is great. A couple of Diamond Leagues have happened, as we've mentioned. We've mentioned the men's 800 in Oslo, George. In the other events, who else sort of stuck out? We had an obvious sort of big performance from Ailish McColgan, who broke Paula Radcliffe's 5,000 metre record. Did you watch that one, guys?
Yes, yeah, I did see that. Very, very impressive performance. It's kind of been a bit of a breakthrough. I mean, she's had a good season. Obviously, she's qualified in the 10K. Yeah, but yeah, I think that was a big PB. And sort of all of a sudden up there with the best in the world. She wasn't far behind Helena Beery and Fantu Worku, who's, yeah, one of the best in Ethiopia. So, yeah, just kind of, she's just gone up a level kind of instantly. As soon as the rest of Britain got close, she just kind of said, see ya, and, yeah, went up a level.
Yeah, did you see what she was saying afterwards, that the last message she got from her partner, Michael Rimmer, was that if she just focuses on the race and not the times, she'll run the British record. And that's exactly what it looked like she did. She wasn't letting them go. She was running to race the other, like, you know, trying to stick with Helen O'Beary and just racing, and it seemed to work. So, yeah, it was great to watch. Great to see her having so much success.
Yeah, she did look really strong in the latter stages. and it did look like she was just racing the athletes around her. So yeah, amazing performance from Ailish McColgan to cap off or to continue an amazing season, as we've said. We saw Keely Hodgkinson run a very quick women's or an 800 in Stockholm. She is now a under 23 and under 20 record holder. She ran 157.51 in the women's 800. She was actually fourth in the race, but a very quick time from her. And also we saw in the men's 800, as we said, Elliot Giles ran an outdoor PB of 144. Fellow Brit Jamie Webb came in last there. Was that an injury, do you think, George, for Jamie Webb, or just didn't happen on the day?
I doubt it was an injury, because that was before he ran, he came second last night and beat Clayton Murphy along with Elliot Giles. Well, Giles second, Webb. No, Giles first, Webb second, I think it was. So, yeah, must have just kind of not been feeling it, I don't know. But yeah, good run for Elliot Giles. Not quite as fast as he ran indoors earlier this year, but still 144.05, so very quick outdoor PB. Yeah, so he's kind of coming into form at the right time, I think, after sort of disappearing for a bit after that indoor season or indoor performance. I was a bit worried that he'd gone off the boil, but no, he's timing it perfectly and is kind of a real gold medal contender, I think, going into Tokyo.
It's going to be really hard to choose winners and podium places for these middle distance events. So many people seem to be capable of putting in a great performance across the board, across the different nations. So,
yeah.
Interesting. A bit closer to home, friend of the show, Jenny Nesbitt, doubled up at an event. She ran a 3,000 and a 1,500. In the same event, she ran clear win in the 3,000 with a 9.14. And a slightly tighter victory in the 1500 with a 4.30. Obviously, looking for a hard day out, I suppose, in a training block. In the BMC Gold Standard races in Stretford, June 29th, Alex Bottrell won the 800 metres. And we saw a host of other great performances there. The Fast 5K in Wigan, George, June 30th. We saw a Scottish double. So Adam Craig won the men's race in 14.22 and Morag Miller won the women's race in 16 minutes flat. So that's the race that's basically on what looks like a car circuit, isn't it, George?
Yeah, it's the Steve Cram one, that one, isn't it? Yeah, looks, yeah, well, certainly pan flat course, but pretty twisty, but yeah, still clearly producing pretty fast times. So yeah, good event.
And also looking ahead to Tokyo somewhat, we saw men's marathon athlete Chris Thompson warming up for his Olympic marathon with a clear win at the Gateshead 10K on July the 4th, Sunday, just gone. And he won that race in 29.44, solo run there with over 2 minutes on second place. Also, friend of the show and previous interviewee, Kirsty Longley, finished sixth in the women's race in 35.11. So loads of races we've spoken about, both what have happened and what's to come. So, yeah, it's good to have all these races back on. And we're not actually that far away now from the big show. We are a matter of weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, I think, until the Olympics start.
Yeah, is it? When is this? The end of July, the athletic starts, isn't it? So, yeah, we'll come around pretty quickly now. So good to see lots of British athletes in form. So, yeah, exciting.
Yeah. Kat, speaking of the Olympics, you sat down and spoke with a future Olympian or someone who's going to Tokyo, Amy Eloise Marcotte. You interviewed her this week and spoke about the upcoming games and her indoor champs. What can the listeners expect from that interview?
Yeah, I was very lucky to get to speak to Amy Eloise after obviously a really complicated selection for her. Really, really great to talk to her about her hopes going into the Olympics and, you know, all the recent races we've seen her run at. And yeah, just really you get the impression of just how experienced she is for a runner of 25. She's been running since she was six. She's run all through high school and through college and now is running professionally. And for a 25-year-old has a lot of experience. And yeah, it was really, really good to see someone so happy to have achieve their dream of going to the Olympics, but also listening to what she wants to achieve whilst there. And I like, Ben, you've listened to that bit where I ask her about her name, haven't you? Because you made a really good attempt there at getting it right. We had a good laugh at all the, did you take that bit out? Because that was in my messing up at the start.
The listeners might not hear it, but I've been calling her Amy Eloise Markov for the last year, I think. But she actually said at the beginning,
that's what I've been going with.
Yeah. But from now on, we'll be calling her Marcotte, I think.
Marcotte. Yeah, Eloise Marcotte. But if you can roll your R's, then you've got to do that at the end. But
I'll just mumble it so no one can really hear what I'm saying. Yeah.
But it's definitely not Markovic or Markov, which comes quite naturally.
Yeah, I think commentators generally go with Markov, don't they? So
you need to
tell Steve Crum that.
Yeah. she's it was really great to speak to her, and I think you'll enjoy the interview. Lots in there, and hopefully she goes and achieves what she wants to in Tokyo.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Kat. And we hope you enjoy listening to that interview and all of the show. That's it, guys. George, best of luck for Friday. Run well. As we always say, stay in lane one, stay out of the wind.
Yeah.
What else do we need to say? Yeah.
Go out hard. I want to see you all either step off the track with a few laps to go because you've absolutely blown up or a massive victory.
Death or glory, George.
Yeah. Nothing to lose. So, why not?
All right, mate.
No player safe.
Cheers, guys, and let's go and watch England, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Cheers. See you soon.
Yeah. Bye. Tonight on Track, we're excited to be joined by 3,000 metre European indoor champion Amy Eloise Markov. Born in England, she grew up and trains in the US. She first represented Team GB as a junior in 2011 in the 2,000 metre steeplechase and has gone on to compete successfully in the British cross country team. Amy Eloise is also the current British record holder for the 2 mile indoors. And if all that wasn't enough, she has most recently earned her spot on the Olympic team in the 5,000 metres. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us tonight.
Oh yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So first off, congratulations on achieving what must be every runner's dream in becoming an Olympian. We all watched you run a brave race to finish second in the British Championships last weekend, which should have been an automatic selection to the Olympic team. Tell us about the race and the crazy circumstances surrounding your selection.
Yeah, so first off, I should say that I'm thrilled to be going to the Olympics. It's been a childhood dream of mine, as it is for I think a lot of people. So but it didn't happen in the way that I had imagined so many times. I kind of had always imagined crossing the line at the trials and qualifying and having this moment of, oh my goodness, I qualified for the Olympics. And clearly that didn't happen. So basically what happened was 2 days before, I got a call from British Athletics saying that my qualifying standard that I had ran in Boston wasn't being recognized by World Athletics because of an issue with the cones that were set out because there was no curb on the track. They were supposed to put down bricks and they put down cones, and there was some kind of miscommunication between USATF and the meet directors, and whatever happened was they did what they were supposed to do, but it wasn't quite enough, I guess. So there's this whole mess about it not counting. So I found that out on the Friday, and then on the Sunday, in that amount of time, I had to completely switch around my brain from thinking, okay, I'm going to go in and sit and kick and, just compete and race and not worry about time, to basically running a time trial. And then of course at the trials, it was a pretty windy day, and I gave it my best go, and I led 11 laps of the race. And then of course, Jess Judd took it over, and she did a wonderful job of kind of bringing us home quite quickly. But I was just off of the time. I think 0.54 of a second. So of course I crossed the line and thought, I didn't do enough. I'm not going to Tokyo. But as it happened was in the next kind of 24 hours, I think USATF took action and basically my time was ratified. So then I was able to actually be selected. But it was a very, very emotional, kind of 48 hours.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it's like to be in that situation. I must admit, I didn't know about your time not being ratified, and watching the race, I thought, what is she doing? She's just making it so easy for everybody else in the field, taking up the front. I was thinking, what sort of race plan is this? And then they said later in the commentary that you were that your time hadn't been ratified, and I thought, that's what she's doing.
Yeah, definitely wouldn't guarantee my strategy otherwise. Yeah. Like obviously Verity and Jess Judd both have amazing kicks, so definitely not like the best strategy, but it was kind of the strategy that I had, and I knew going into it I was going to have to try and lead it wire to wire. And fortunately my time was ratified, but the whole thing was quite frustrating because I had done what I from my end that I was supposed to do. I ran the time, I got two of the trials that should get me a ticket to Tokyo. So it's very frustrating how the politics kind of got in the way of that. And like, I couldn't imagine how I would feel if I hadn't have made the team. I think it's just really hard to wrap your head around how kind of the politics get in the way.
Yeah, that would have been really unfair for the sake of a few cones to have missed an Olympic spot when you did everything you needed to do.
But yeah, especially since the tracks are, I think the tracks without the rail are actually measured differently. So what I've heard is those tracks are slightly longer as well. So I even ran farther and it still wasn't. Yeah. Anyway, so it was all a bit stressful.
5 seconds. I mean, even with cones, how would you shave off 5 seconds?
It wasn't like it was 15.09.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you finally got that news and finally got your ticket to Tokyo. So earlier in the month, we saw you have a go at 10,000 metre British Olympic trials. How did that race go and how did it affect your confidence going into the 5,000 metres?
Well, it didn't go to plan. We'll say that first of all. I mean, I made the decision to go and run that race in Boston kind of less than a week before, and then I flew out straight from Boston to go race the 10k trials. So I made that decision because I didn't want to go into the trials not having a qualifying time, because you know I was less than a second off the 10k time, and at that point a second off of the 5k time as well, and I just really wanted to be able to go into champs being able to compete and not worry so much about time. Because for me, I race best when I'm competing. I don't race best time trialing, pay too much attention to the clock. So I made that decision. And then I think that with the travel and everything, I just wasn't 100% on the day, which was very disappointing because I had such a great 10K, you know, for 3-4 weeks earlier. So obviously I was pretty disappointed. But, you know, I think everything happens as it's supposed to. And, you know, obviously I think the 5K was meant to be in the end. So really I just spent a few weeks in between, tried to get my confidence back up, and just I had some great weeks of running in between where I just knew I was feeling good. So I was really just trying to focus on how that was going versus how the 10k went as I was preparing for the 5k.
Do you think you would have doubled if you had qualified in both, or was the 10,000 always just the backup?
No, so I wouldn't have doubled. I just personally I just don't think I'm quite there yet, development wise. I would love to be in that position. I think, you know, maybe, you know, 3 years from now I'll be there, but if I'm going to go to Tokyo and have quality races on the day, yeah, I'd rather put my energy and focus into one. So the plan was originally to try and, if I qualified in the 10K, I probably would have come back to my training group right away. I might have not even run the 5K trials and just focused on training through and just preparing the best way possible. So we really just had to, I was kind of a go with the flow. I was on a one-way ticket. Didn't know how long I was going to be in England for and everything. So it would have definitely shaped up to be a very different summer, I think.
Yeah. So whilst we're on the topic of selections and things, what do you think of the British selection policy compared to the US? the sort of all-out trials format versus the more sort of having some discretion over the last place, which selection policy would you prefer to be against?
This is a difficult question because I see the merits of both. I think the US, you know, there's no question about who qualifies on the day, and whoever performs on the day is going to get that opportunity. And there's no room for error, and there's no room for politics. But the one thing is, like with the British election policies, is it does allow for if something, we have a, you know, for example, Eilish just ran the British record, you know, and in the 5K. And if she had run the trial, she wouldn't have been able to do that. So there are like benefits, I think, for the British election. It's just sometimes the politics can get in the way. And I know there has been kind of a bit of drama in the past with different teams and who's getting selected for what. And it definitely does make it stressful when you're waiting for the phone call to see if you've made it or not. So I think there's merits to both. And it's really difficult to say because I think I've been on the right side of it and I've been on the wrong side of it. So yeah, it's just difficult to say, I think.
It is difficult, isn't it? In some situations, it's really good. And if there's a fall, I think it's really good to have that discretionary place. Because if someone falls in the race, it would, and you know they were the better person. But yeah, it's interesting to see the two different ways. How's preparation going for Tokyo? Are you doing anything differently?
So not really. And that's been something really I've been trying not to do because I think it's very easy to get really overexcited and trying to add new things in and try to do everything you possibly can. But at the end of the day, I've been working hard all this time and I've put in the work, and I've kind of, the best thing for me is just going to continue doing what I'm doing and sharpen up and things. I'm definitely paying attention a bit more to just preparation in terms of heat and humidity and things like that, and just being mindful of those kind of arrangements, which is one of the reasons I came back to Charlottesville, was because it is quite hot and humid here. So it's actually going to be quite good heat acclimation before I actually arrive at the holding camp. But yeah, in terms of actual training, I'm not doing anything flashy. I'll do some great tune-up workouts, and I'll just try and, but yeah, just not trying to overdo things, because I think the worst thing I could do is just, you know, do too much and kind of exhaust myself going into the champs.
So how do you cope with with a big race like the Olympics? How do you cope with nerves? Is it something that you've found ways to deal with? Or
that's a great question, because I haven't actually done a race as big as the Olympics, so it's going to be a bit of a learning process. But I think for me, it's just really focusing on my preparation and just trying to stay relaxed. I think indoor champs was a fabulous opportunity for me for Europeans to kind of practice those strategies and really just practice positive self-talk and really competing on the day when I needed it to happen. I think it's a lot of pressure, and obviously I feel the nerves, but for me, it's just finding a balance. Like I need some time alone, but I also need some time with other people, just chatting and just trying to calm those nerves and distract me a little bit. And I need to think about the race a little bit, but if I obsess over the race, it's almost mentally exhausting before you actually get on the start line. So it's all about finding that balance. And for me, just I'm trying not to, at this stage, I'm trying not to think about it too much, because it's not really going to change what I'm doing in the here and now, and I don't want it to change what I'm doing in the here and now. But obviously before the race, there's going to be lots of visualization, just to really just trying to keep calm. And fortunately we're going to have enough, we're going to be in Tokyo with the holding camp in the Olympic Village for 2 weeks before. So I think once I get into that environment, I'll feel very differently.
Yeah. So what sort of self-talk do you, what sort of things do you say to yourself during a race to sort of keep that positive?
Yeah, I think it's about just kind of being, trusting myself and trusting my instincts. And really, I often write down like a few kind of phrases or cue words or something like that, really just to keep me anchored to my race plan. And I find that helpful beforehand. But the biggest thing for me recently has been focusing more on kind of how I'm framing it and how I'm speaking to myself. It's instead of saying, don't fall off of this pace, I think, oh, you're in a great spot, you're perfect, stay right here, this is where you need to be, versus thinking about what I don't want to do. So that's been really interesting, kind of trying to take out those negatives and frame it in a positive way. And I think that's been helpful as well, because then I'm focusing on where I want to go versus where I don't want to go.
On chat, we like to go through our interviewees' PBs to give our listeners some idea of just how fast you are. And I have to say, this is an impressive list of PBs. So I've pulled these up power of 10, so let me know if any of them are wrong. But we've got 800 metres, we've got 207.84. And then for the 1500 metres, 409.31. I mean, they're almost Olympic qualifying standards in the 1500 there.
And I would say a bit far off of that. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm hoping to take that 1500 time down a bit in not too long future. So
yeah, well, Revy Wolcott Nolan's going to the Olympics on 4:06, so it's very close.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
We've got for the mile, I've got 4:33.25, and then in the 3000 meters, obviously in the European indoors, we have 8:46.43, and then in the 2 miles indoors, we've got 9:30.69, which I believe is the British record for that.
Yeah,
and then we have the controversial 5000 meters, 15:05.96, and finally a 10,000 metres, 31:25.91, so close to the Olympic qualifying standard. I mean, that is an impressive array of PBs. Which one are you most proud of out of those?
I would say that the 10K, probably. I know it was just off of the standard, and I think painfully close. I think if you think about 0.91 over 25 laps, that's painful. But in that race, the race plan was to kind of stick in the top third and just hang as long as I could and, you know, try and close hard. And as it unfolded, I ended up in the front in my very first 10K with multiple Olympians in the field. And, and I could have just completely spiraled out of control and been very, very stressed about the situation, because I kept trying to give away the lead and nobody was taking it from me. So but I kept my cool and was able, it was a race that was really nervous for, because I had no idea how I was going to feel, 6K in. But I tried to keep calm and I had a great call. So I was really proud of that one. And hopefully the 15:05 will replace that with a much faster PB in a couple of weeks. Yeah. So hopefully the controversial one's off the list. But definitely that 10K, very, very proud of that as a debut.
Lots more to come. Maybe next Olympics for that one.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think the conditions in Paris will be a little better than they are in Tokyo for a 10K. So yeah.
You've picked the right distance for the hot Olympics.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge, I think, for a lot of people.
So are there any other performances that you're proud of that weren't necessarily PBs, but a performance or race that just went really well for you?
Well, Europeans obviously was a big one for me, but that was a PB on the day, and I kind of didn't realise. And that was interesting because I was just competing. I wasn't necessarily paying attention to the clock. That was a PB race, but really I was just proud that I took the lead. I think I took it with 300 or 400 meters to go, and I wasn't afraid to do that. And so I was more proud of the way I kind of raced bravely. In terms of non-PB races, it's interesting. I think the ones I'm most proud of are the ones where I was coming back from injury and I was just hadn't raced in a long time. So back in university, I had struggled with a lot of injuries. So I remember being very proud of when I actually was able to stand the line and race again. It wasn't very fast, and it's, I think I ran a 1200 in a DMR. And I think it was actually slower than I run in track sessions now. I literally run it in practice. But that was at the time a very, very kind of a big deal for me. So I think all of those ones are kind of more circumstantial.
So I ask everyone this, I think, because it's my favorite distance, but how interested are you in stepping up to the marathon? Is that something you see in your future?
So that's a funny question, because before December, I would have said absolutely not. Like, I think I would have said, oh, maybe I'll run one day to check it off the bucket list, but I wouldn't do one seriously. And then I had my teammate, Paige Stoner, in December, she, in the marathon project, she just went out and ran 228, in a first marathon ever, broke the under 25 US record for women. And after she did that, and I just think of the work I've done with her, and obviously she was in great shape and she was so prepared. But after I saw her do that, I was almost inspired me to think, oh, maybe one day I will kind of step up to the marathon and see what I can do. I think it's a kind of a beast in itself, though, with the nutritional standpoint and everything. And there's so many things that can go haywire. But I do think it would be very interesting to race one day. And my coach is phenomenal at coaching marathoners. We have multiple people on the team that are very, very good. So I know if I want to go in that direction eventually, that he would be able to train me to that.
Yeah, well, that will be interesting to look out for in the future then. I think the marathon is just one of those distances, you know, trying to build a good marathon block is like a little challenge in itself, trying to do everything right for that build up. It's such a long build up for one race. A lot of people go to it later in their career, so it's something to maybe look for later.
Yeah, definitely something to think about. I think the next few years, I really kind of see myself in the 5 and the 10. I think as I go, I might find, just off of my debut 10, I think I just know there's so much in there, you know, if I was focusing more on that event as well. So, yeah, I think after, you know, after I feel like I've really found, kind of explored what I can do in those events, then I might move up a little bit, but we'll see. Not making any promises yet.
So you've had a lot of success in the US, but this year seen some breakthrough performances on this side of the pond. Take us back to your build up to the European Indoor Championships in March, where you ran a really confident heat and final to win gold. Did you know you were in that sort of shape?
So I knew I was, I think if you had asked me earlier in the indoor season, I would have said absolutely not. I opened with a very, very slow mile. I just couldn't find the legs. And then I think I was all about turning my brain around mentally. And like, I went to go to New Balance. I had to change my outlook very quickly to do that. Because I had such a rough race the day before, though 2 weeks before, and then I went to New Balance and basically ran the same pace for 3K instead of 2 miles, or sorry, instead of a mile. And so it was a kind of a big like mental battle, because I was kind of had some great workouts, but I also had some chapters that I they were still good, but maybe I wished I had done a bit more. But yeah, and then I had a couple of sessions where I felt quite prepared, and then the legs were just started feeling really good like a couple of weeks before, and and I knew after the prelims I could just feel it, that I had a big opportunity, but I don't think it really hit me that I was in medal contention until I was actually had completed the prelims.
You actually stayed quite quiet at the start of the final. You were sat back. I was watching it back a few times today, and you're sat quite far to the back, not really causing any trouble, not doing anything. And just as the race goes on, you slowly make your way through the field, and then just seem to be like, oh, I'm still feeling good, I'm going for it.
Yeah, it was an interesting race, because I was a bit farther back at the start, and it was the heats were so messy. And people were stepping over the line and all sorts and getting disqualified and falling over. And so I really kind of wanted to stay out of trouble a little bit. And I didn't think I didn't realize I was quite as far back as I was. But really I was just trying to look for an opportunity where I could get around, and kind of move into the top four. And then stayed there and then, you know, felt really good. And the race plan wasn't necessarily to even kick quite that early, but I just trusted my instincts and I just felt like it was the right time. And that was kind of the first race where I didn't question it. And I thought, you know, it came so naturally and I didn't overthink the situation. And it was really, it was almost like racing when I was a kid. When I didn't really overthink it, I just my legs would go and I would just race. So I think that was a big step for me as well, because I didn't question myself in that moment. So that's definitely an experience that I'm trying to take forward into Tokyo, is really when, you know, trusting myself and trusting my instincts, and not looking at the clock and questioning how fast I'm going, just giving myself an opportunity to run, you know, massively fast.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like watching the race, is that you just thought, I feel like I've still got something in my legs, I'm going for it. And it was just that kind of, you know, it didn't look like a pre-planned surge, it just looked like, I'm still feeling good, I'm gonna start kicking now.
Yeah, it was interesting as well in indoors, because you sometimes in that last 200 or that last 100 especially, you just run out of real estate. You know, you don't have enough of the home stretch, and it's hard to get around on the corner. So there is a benefit of moving a little earlier than you would maybe on an outdoor track, just because, you know, those last couple laps fly by. But yeah, it wasn't exactly premeditated, but it worked in my favor. So
yeah, it was a good race, and I think Amelia Quirk putting so much pace into it helped pull everybody on for a PB. And I think there was the Israeli athlete as well out the front. Watching it back, I was surprised to see how much Costa didn't seem to have any awareness of where anybody else was on the track. Everyone that tried to pass her nearly got run off the track. And I think she eventually fell, but that looked quite hard to negotiate on. I don't know if it's the camber of the track or something just makes it
yeah
hard.
It can be a bit difficult if you're not used to running on a bank, which I honestly don't run on a bank very much. I have gotten a bit more used to it now, but yeah, like I said, the heats were just really messy, and I think that made everyone quite nervous, and obviously just wanted to stay out of trouble in the final. But like you said, Amelia Quirk, she took it from the gun, and I think that was amazing, because no matter what happened on the day, so many of us came out with PBs that we couldn't be too disappointed wherever we fell on the results. And obviously, you know, I was thrilled on that day because I won, but I also think that, you know, if I got second, third, fourth, if I'd run 8:46, that was a massive PB. So I would have been happy with that, no matter the actual result in comparison to everyone else. So I think there's a beauty to championship racing when it is fast and it's not tactical. And yeah, I just love it. I love an honest championship.
Yeah, sometimes if you're going to go to a big event, it's nice for, you know, especially Amelia Quirk and people like that, to think, right, well, I'm leaving with a PB, even if I don't win, I'm going to get something out of today.
Yeah, and I think that's my biggest, I mean, I'm thinking about Tokyo and thinking, but if I come out with a massive PB, I know I did all I could. So I think as much as I'm obviously going to be focusing, like, okay, who do I need to beat to get through the final and all this sort of thing, at the end of the day, I'm also just focusing on myself and what I can do. Yeah. And, you know, if I run a PB then, and I've given it everything, well, and I've represented my country to the best of my ability, then I can't do any more than that.
In 2017, you moved out to Charlottesville to train with Reebok Boston Track Club. What's it like being a professional team and being on a professional team and training with a group? How's that helped your running?
Yeah, so I actually moved out in 2018, which was a bit of a leap of faith because we'd never even visited the area, and my husband, you know, quit his job and said, okay, let's go move across the country for this opportunity. And it's been amazing because we're not a huge group, but, you know, I have some great training partners, some really talented people that I'm working with every day. Both the women and men's side, we do a lot of things together. So we're kind of it's a very cohesive group. We have great coaches, a great assistant coach, and basically a great support system all around. So it is amazing being in that kind of team environment because even though there are some days where we do her runs on her own. I do a lot of my doubles by myself and that sort of thing. And we have space to do that if we need to. But for all kind of the hard sessions, it's amazing having a group, because one of you is bound to feel amazing on a given day and one of you is bound to feel not feeling so good and that sort of thing. And I think we really step up and help each other. So it's been an amazing experience, and I've really enjoyed my time here so far. And I feel like the group is just doing so well this year. It's really cool to see people kind of finding their groove.
So is there any sort of, does the team help with lifestyle and nutrition and things like that, or do they just focus on the running side?
So when we focus on the running side, I think for myself personally, I know quite a lot about nutrition and all that sort of thing. And I reach out for resources when I need them. But I feel like I do quite a good job with all the lifestyle things. I mean, obviously, some people might be in need of a bit more help than others. But yeah, we kind of focus a lot more. It's very much running based. It kind of, just even giving you a running community is amazing. Much more running based, but also, you know, that we have, like I said, we have a great support system, we have physio, massage and all that sort of thing, that's pretty easy to access. So basically I'm very, very grateful for the situation I'm in, because I know that I wouldn't necessarily be on this team if I had just been training alone back in Washington or even back in England. Like I might not be here.
Yeah, I can imagine having that sort of support of a whole team. You get the running done without it being such a chore when you've got a whole group around you doing it.
Yeah, and I think it just even getting the, like I said, a lot of the work we do isn't necessarily that flashy. It's just getting in the miles. And when you have a group and you have great conversation, you're connecting with other people, and it's also a social outlet. The miles fly by.
I saw a video that you recorded about calf activation before runs. What other habits do you do that help you be a successful runner? And do you actually do that one?
I actually do all of those exercises. Not necessarily all at the same time every day. But I do that quite often. The reason I'm laughing, because in that video, I was having trouble not falling over when I was recording it, which was, I just found kind of funny. I do a lot of activation stuff, and it's been pretty key for me, because I was quite injured at university. I had several bone injuries. I had a very troublesome IT bend issue that, you know, took me out of running for quite a long time. I had a tear in my glute med, which is a very strange injury to have as a runner, and lower leg injuries. I had quite a lot going on, and so I had to do a lot of, I really focus on like glute activation, core activation is the kind of the real big key focus that I have, especially before runs every day. But also lower leg activation, I've been trying to be a bit better about that, just really focusing on like post tib work. So looking at, you know, like in that video, I was doing like more like calf raises type thing, and different arch activation exercises. So that's been really key, I think, on keeping me healthy, especially over the past couple of years.
Yeah. So do you try and build in some activation before each run, the sort of glute activation and things like that?
Yeah, before each run, I'll usually do a little bit of mobility and things to get moving as well, depending on what I'm feeling and, you know, at a particular day. But I pretty much always, without fail, will do dead bugs, glute bridges, maybe even just a little bit of an active plank to get that core turned on. But I'll do several different types of glute activation. I'll do, you know, with the band walks. And like standing, like lateral leg lifts and things like that. But it kind of depends on kind of what I'm feeling during the sit, you know, at a certain point in the day or the week, and kind of how tight and tired I am and that sort of thing. But I will always get some form of core activation or some form of glute activation in before I run.
Good stuff. I'm going to try that. So I've got some quick fire questions for you. So if you could go for a run with one athlete, dead or alive, who would, runner or otherwise, who would it be?
Oh, that's a really difficult one. I'd probably say Kelly Holmes, just because I was obsessed with her when I was little, and I, you know, read a book and everything. And I just thought it was amazing doubling at the Olympics like that. So I'd probably say Kelly Holmes, to be honest.
Good choice. And if you could only choose one race to compete in each year, so not a distance, but an actual race, which one would it be?
Probably the Olympics. this year, definitely the Olympics. I think for me, it's like trying to find the best race at the biggest stage possible to be able to kind of push myself in the best way possible. And I think at those meets, you always talk to amazing people and you connect with people that you never thought you would. And you've been watching, compete on TV and things and giving interviews and all sorts. And then all of a sudden you're standing next to them, talking to them. And I think that's an amazing experience. So for me, I would say on any given year, Olympics, World Championships, all those sorts of big championship racing, just because I think it's just such an experience you're never going to forget.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it's like preparing to go to the first Olympics. Just the whole experience of it is, whether you're running there or not, just being there with all the other athletes, it's just an amazing experience. What's your favourite session?
Favorite session? Oh, this has changed over the years. I would, you know, if you talked to me a few years ago, I would have said like literally just 300s and 400s. But now I'd say my favorite sessions are probably 800s or 1Ks, or a combination of that, maybe followed by a little faster stuff to finish. I also have really come to love when we do tempos in long runs, or pickups in long runs. And I can't believe I'm saying this, because I used to absolutely be terrified of them, but there is nothing like the feeling of, you know, finishing a long run with a really, really good hard session in the middle. And there's just nothing about that. There's no other way to feel that powerful, I think. Especially if the conditions are bad, I think no matter kind of what happens, you just always finish thinking, wow, like I can't believe my body did that. And I think that's really fun.
Sounds like you're definitely getting close to being ready to run a marathon.
Yeah, marathoners do a lot of that kind of work. I will say it's taken a bit of learning. I've definitely had some bad ones, but now I mean I can go out there and do it by myself, and if I prefer to do it with other people, but I've learned enough at this point to be able to go out there and, you know, do those hard tempos in long run and feel really good about them when I finish.
Yeah, that's good. So which do you prefer out of track, road and country?
Track, definitely track. I will say, I'm quite good at cross country. And I think there's definitely elements that I do love. It's just pure racing and you're not looking at the clock and things. But there are a lot of things I don't like about cross country. Like, for instance, in England, it's a lot muddier than it was like in the NCAA system. And it's usually freezing, which I don't love. But I do like the grittiness aspect of that. But I think if I had to choose one, I'd say track.
Yeah. So do you have a sort of go-to pre-race song that you put on, or anything you listen to for your sessions?
No, I mean, it changes so much. I don't listen to a ton of music. I think sometimes it's more of just a way to kind of escape from the external environment, maybe if I just need to be alone for a bit. But I've never been one that needs music to pump me up beforehand. I think it doesn't bother me, but I've also don't rely on that. I'd say it changes. There's a wide variety of what I might listen to.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us tonight. It's been so interesting to hear about your year of running. Where can people follow you if they want to follow you on social media?
Yeah, so the main, well, really the only platform I'm very active on at the moment is Instagram. So that's Amy Eloise M. is my handle. So yeah, Amy Eloise M, and you can follow me on there.
Great. Oh, thanks a lot, and a massive good luck for the Olympics. We'll be cheering you on all the way. So good luck, and I hope you come away with a great performance.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you.